Today's episode is brought to you by Harrys.com. Use promo code LOC at checkout to save $5 off your first purchase.
Congratulations, boy.
Many gave their lives that we might stand here once again, united in the government of a lawful republic.
Gaius Octavian was henceforth to be regarded, for all intents and purposes, as my lawful son.
Gaius Octavian Caesar.
All right, we're back, episode 22. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
Good, good. Has anyone insulted your intelligence recently? Should I play that clip from Rob Irwin again from the last episode? Do you want to hear it again? I can play it again. I've got it here. It's queued up.
I'm good. Thank you, though. That's appreciate right. it.
Yeah. You're welcome. Last time on the show, we had this situation where everyone's gone off to do things after they did the peace deal with Sextus. Sextus has gone back to Sicily. Antony and his new wife, Octavia, have gone to Athens to spend the winter, and then he's going to go off and fight the Parthians. Octavian has sent Agrippa to Gaul to take care of some unrest there. Octavian himself, we didn't really talk about in much detail last time. He stayed in Italy. And what's he doing in Italy, Ray?
Actually, sorry about that. If I can just ask a quick question before we move on. Why does Mark Antony have to punish the Parthians? They're gone.
They're gone?
They've been pushed out, you know, as far as the immediate Roman provinces. I read something about he has to get revenge for Crassus.
Well, yes.
And I couldn't help.
I thought that was obvious.
And I could, right, no, right. Okay, ouch, that hurt. But I couldn't help but think that Crassus was roughly Caesar's age. Mark Antony's a bit younger than he is.
No, and so, Crassus was a lot older than Caesar. He was the guy that funded Caesar's career. He was,
oh, that's right. That's
he
right.
was a but good 10, 15 years older, I think.
Okay, shut up. But my point is, they were more peers than Marcus Antonius, who was younger than Caesar. So is it like a personal dying, I've got to get back for this guy? Or is it just a justification just to keep his armed forces going to keep the power? I mean, you can't just sit around at some point. I guess you can't just sit around with your army and not do anything. You've got to be seen to doing something for the good of Rome and the Roman people and all that stuff. So I guess it's just something he has to do because he's expected to do something.
No, and he wants their money, man. It's the same reason everyone goes to war ever.
Right. But
we want their money.
Right, this is driving me crazy. So the last episode we said Caesar's in debt. Sextus has got to keep going with what he's doing. Marcus Antonius is in debt. If they all got rid of most of their armies, they would have an easier time funding what they had left. But because they keep massive armies, they have to go out and plunder all the time to pay their armies. So they got their armies, so they have to go out and plunder. And so they plunder, so they have to keep their armies to protect themselves. I mean, it's just this vicious cycle.
Yeah.
It's just all testosterone policy, and it hasn't changed in 2,000 years.
That's right. And what the military spending in the U.S. is what percentage of your federal budget?
Staggering. And people.
15? Is it like 15%? I'm not exactly sure how much it is now. I know in the Cold War era, because we've been reading about it, studying it, it was like 30% of the federal budget was on military spending.
And how can you not have a good economy when your government is spending a shit ton of money, taking it from the taxpayers, and it's just a cycle of creating jobs or whatever? But between that and what the budget of the NSA, I mean, just Jesus Christ, we could end the stuff right away. But
you
anyway,
could, so that, you could end world poverty.
Yeah. We could wipe out our debt and then go out and help everybody. But anyway, it's not going to happen. So let's just go back to 2,000 years ago.
No, but yeah, I think so. For people that haven't listened to the old Julius Caesar series, Crassus, cut a long story short, the richest guy in Rome, was a member of the first triumvirate with Caesar and Pompey the Great. He goes to Parthia, which is basically Persia, in order to, you know, try and conquer them and turn them into another Roman province. Gets his ass kicked quite quickly.
Literally,
has his head chopped off and molten gold poured down his decapitated throat. Julius Caesar, yeah, and Julius Caesar was going to go and revenge him. Caesar gets assassinated 3 days before he can do that. And so, yeah, Antony's using that kind of as an excuse, but really at the end of the day, it's about he needs their money. He wants to go and get, he wants them to be paying tribute, wants to bring them into the empire, keeping in mind that, you know, at this point in time, the Roman Empire doesn't control the entire world as we may think of it. I mean, there's still large parts of the known world then, and they definitely knew about this because Alexander had conquered Persia hundreds of years previously. And so they want to bring this, they think this is, it's now time to bring Parthia into the Roman Empire, it was still probably a very wealthy part of the world as it was when Alexander conquered it. We know that, you know, how much wealth it brought into Alexander's coffers when he conquered Parthia.
I can't help but picture, you know, like you said, 3 days before Caesar is about to leave, he is assassinated. I just can't help but imagine him thinking along the terms of, I'm going to walk in the footsteps of Alexander the Great and conquer what he conquered. I mean, how could you not, you know, at his age, live for that and get all excited? And of course, it's all cut short, but.
Yeah. You know, he was reading Alexander's biographies again over and over, like, finally get to do that. Anyway. So Octavian remains in Italy, where he starts a massive shipbuilding program to create a strong navy. I wonder why he's doing that.
We have peace in our time.
Sextus was all like, what? and Octavian was all like this.
Hey, relax, guy. I'm just your average Joe. Take a rest. Hey, relax, guy. Trust me. Hey, relax, guy. I'm going to keep my side of the bargain. Huh?
And he probably sounded like that because he's only 24.
Yeah. So the peace holds, but obviously Alexander, Octavian's thinking he's going to need a big navy for something.
And again, that's my question. Does Octavian not have the mentality to just be happy with what he's got? He's going to go for it all. Because this kid did not kill his adopted father. He had nothing to do with it. Yeah, his dad, they fought, whatever. But this kid had nothing to do with it. He's an impediment. He's in the way. I want to rule everything. I want to, maybe my father showed me the way on how to rule the world. I want it all. And this guy's in the way. And I need a bunch of ships to take his ass out. That's what I'm going to do. I mean,
well, you know, I think it's, you know, it is a great line of questioning. And I think it actually does play into the Cold War too. It's, you know, the economic spheres of influence that the United States, the UK, and Russia were fighting over in the last half of the 20th century. You could have argued the same thing. Look, just be happy with the third that you've got.
Yes.
But no, they wanted it all. Yeah. I mean, they couldn't be happy with dividing up economic spheres of influence. The UK and the US wanted Eastern Europe and all of Europe. They didn't want it to fall into a Russian zone of control, in the same way that Churchill was worried before World War II erupted that Europe was going to fall under German economic control, there was going to be a trading bloc. He knew how that worked because Britain had the biggest trading bloc in the world in history at the time. 30% of the world was part of the British Empire's trading bloc, where they controlled what got sold, what got bought, and, you know, what kind of preferential treatment England got on those terms.
They set the prices, they set everything.
So that's economics, man. It's what drives all of this shit.
Bloody economics. The only credit I can give Octavian is that the one thing is that since so much of the grain that Rome needs comes from Sicily. So I get that. I guess maybe his thinking, to give him all the benefits of the doubt, is to literally say, okay, he could keep us just a week or so away from starving for the next 20 years. I've got to take this guy out. I've got to take control of these two islands in North Africa if I want to make sure that the people don't starve, because I'm sick of them, tired of attacking my tax collectors or whatever, you know, who knows?
But he's married to his sister. Aren't they all happy and everything's good?
No.
Scribonia. Was she a sister, cousin, something? I can't
something,
remember.
Something, something.
Yeah, she was related to him somehow.
The family that plays together stays together. But anyway, I mean, but so I, at the very least, I could give him that justification about I don't need this guy having this sword over my head all the time.
Yeah. As we said in the last episode, it's, you know, kill or be killed. Strike first.
Yeah.
Preemptive strikes is what they were, the basis of it all. Now, as we mentioned last time, one of the exiles who returned to Rome after the prescriptions were relaxed was one Tiberius Claudius Nero.
Cool name.
And I think I've heard it somewhere before. Now, Nero was a wily one. He had first was against the first triumvirate, Caesar, Pompey, and Crassus. But then, in the Civil War, he supported Caesar.
Yay!
But then, after the assassination, he supported the assassins.
Yay!
But when they were defeated at Philippi, he supported Antony, who made him praetor in 42.
I'm confused. Yay!
He had, by the way, been betrothed to marry Cicero's daughter.
Hmm.
But she married Dolabella instead to Cicero's disgust, and rightfully so, because we've seen what a piece of shit Dolabella was.
Bastard.
So instead, he marries a young girl called Livia. Livia Drusus. When she was probably 14 or 15 years old. He would have been in his mid to late 30s. And I was talking to Chrissy about this out in the deck over a stogie last night or the night before. Tomcats came knocking at my door. Can you imagine being in your late 30s and marrying a 15-year-old?
I'm slightly turned off. I'd rather be the 40-something-year-old marrying the 20 that I can get behind. But yeah, that's just ruining a good night's dream for me. That's just way too. But that was the norm. That's when they started getting young. That was when they started getting married and having babies.
But we know that love wasn't a big deal. In fact, I've got a quote later on about love. So these people didn't marry for love. They married for political connection. They married for child birth and breeding, mixing the bloodlines, all that kind of stuff. But Oh, that reminds me of a song.
Well, I just have to throw this in real quick. I know we haven't finished with his life yet, but in the next couple of years, I mean, his wife, who has no business thinking about political events or anything like that, has got to be extremely disappointed in the choices that this Tiberius Claudius Nero has made, because he seems to like perfectly pick the wrong side of every situation. And it's lucky that he's still alive at this point for him to lose his wife eventually. But he seems to come down on the wrong side of almost everything that important that was important that happened to Rome during his lifetime.
Here's a song about mixing the races.
Iggy Pop. Mix it all up.
Iggy Pop, motherfuckers! Great album, American Caesar, if you've never heard it. Fucking great album. Early 90s album by Iggy Pop.
Didn't he just come out with a new one?
He did, and it's fucking good too, man. Okay. Done by Josh Homme, is the producer of it. Anyway, so yes, Nero, blah, 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 married Olivia.
Chameleon.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, how do you have a conversation with a 15-year-old? I mean, I've got some 15-year-old nieces in the US that I spend time with over Christmas, and they're great. They're fun. They're, you know, they're great. You can have a conversation. But I couldn't imagine, like, you know,
having your wife.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I couldn't imagine, like, having that kind of, anyway. But they obviously married for different reasons.
So you bend down, you kiss her on the forehead, and you go, so which are the One Directions your favorite? I mean, I don't know. What are you talking about?
Exactly. So he joined after all of this, and he was praetor in 42. He then joins Lucius Antonius during the Peruzine War, raised troops from the veteran settlements for him. When that fails, he was proscribed and fucked off to Sicily to join up with Sexy P. But when he got there, he and Sexy P didn't get along very well, so he kept going to Greece.
God.
Apparently got himself into some trouble there, had to flee to Sparta.
He's a dick.
Where something happened in Sparta and they got caught in a forest fire and nearly died.
Yeah. Right.
Like, he's just fucking trouble, man. He's trouble on two legs, this guy.
His wife cannot be even 20 or whatever year. I don't know how old she is. She's got to be thinking, I think I chose poorly.
I don't think she had any choice in the matter.
No, I think someone chose poorly for me.
Yeah. But it's his wife
love
that we really
need
to talk about. So Livia, she was known by the nickname Drusilla.
Right.
I'll talk about her bloodline, where that comes from. She was Claudian by blood, though, which is the thing we need to know here. The Claudii. Yes.
Which is a big deal.
Yeah. Now, it was a much bigger deal than I even appreciated before I started drilling down into it. Now, the Claudians were as old as the Republic itself.
Right.
I think they had their founder of the dynasty had migrated to Rome from the Sabine Hills, a few miles to the north of the city, only 5 years after the expulsion of Tarquin the Proud, Tarquin Superbus, the last king of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd been around since the very beginning of the creation of the Republic. Less than a decade after he moved there, Attius Clausus, his name was, he had become consul. The family had managed to secure 5 dictatorships.
Wow.
Not just consulships, dictatorships.
Yeah. And in this case, those aren't bad things. Those are actually a sign of honor because you've been picked to help save the Republic in times of distress. So actually, it's a very big honor.
And who was the most famous Claudian of them all, Ray?
Who was the Claudian? Let's see here. Let me add this real quick. So even though the Claudian the Claudian line, if you will, was noble, she was from the most august of that line. So again, just her blue blood from just the get-go, 100%. It could not get any better than her as far as the blood flowing through her veins, as far as the Romans were concerned.
And who was she descended from?
Tell me.
Appius Claudius the Blind.
Oh.
Now, he did a few things in his time. Yeah, he did a few things. 312 BCE. I think he was consul at the time. The Republic needed to figure out a way of controlling its growing empire. So he had this idea. Let's build a big fucking road. A bit like the Royal Road that they had in Persia. What do we call it? Oh, well, my name's Appius. Let's call it the Via Appia.
The Appian Way. Nice. Yeah. Named, he will live forever.
Named after her great, great, great grandfather.
Damn, that's nice.
Also, he didn't stop there.
No.
He's like, you know what? We need a better way to get water into Rome. I know. I'll invent the aqueduct. So Appius Claudius the Blind built Rome's first aqueduct.
Damn.
So, not only built the most famous road in the world,
right.
but...
he's a builder.
Got water. Into the city. Yeah, so he was obviously, you know, absolutely revered, and she was directly descended from him. Her father was adopted by Marcus Livius Drusus, who was the head of one of the oldest and most important families of plebeian aristocrats.
Damn, she's got it on both sides, blood and adoption. She is as fine as it gets.
Yeah. He was tribune of the plebs in 91 BCE. Now, his main claim to fame, when he was tribune, he fought for recognition of the Italian cities.
Not a conservative.
No, not a conservative, and was murdered for it.
Yeah.
Which
he was ahead of his time. Yeah.
He was, which directly led to the Italian cities rising up and led to the social war, the war of the socii that we talked about way, way, way back in the beginning of the JC series. This is where the Italian cities fought against Rome. And it ended up with them being granted Roman citizenship eventually. Yeah. So he was remembered with great fondness throughout Italy, as was her other ancestor, Appius Claudius. So, yeah, she has got it all, man, in terms of the bloodlines.
Yes.
And she's apparently gorgeous and smart and funny and fucked like a mix.
Whole package. She's the whole package. She's like Cleopatra. She's just everything.
And she swallowed, is what I heard. And wasn't afraid of a little bit of anal play.
No.
Not every night, but, you know, special occasions.
And you got to do it in the right order. But other than that, she was awesome. She was awesome.
Now, her own father had been proscribed, fought with Brutus and Cassius, and committed suicide after Philippi. But no one held against her.
Right, that was the noble thing to do. So that actually saves the family's honor. If he hadn't, then the family's honor would take a huge blow. But he did the right thing.
But at that stage, she was already married. And in November 42 BCE, gave birth to a son, also named Tiberius Claudius Nero. And I'm not sure about this, but I think he may go on to make a name for himself.
Could be. We might hear from him again.
We might as the series progresses.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, when her husband, Nero, rebelled against the triumvirs, she was only 17.
Damn.
She went into exile with him, as I said. It didn't go well. They lived pretty rough, constantly avoiding their pursuits because there was a price on his head, obviously. He'd been prescribed. So there were people trying to kill him to take his head back to the triumvirs to get the reward. Twice, apparently, their baby, Nero the Younger's crying, nearly gave them away. When they escaped from Sparta at the forest fire incident, her dress and hair caught fire. But finally, the prescriptions end. They return to Rome. They got no money. Like most of the exiles, you know, even though they were promised to get a quarter share of their confiscated property back, it didn't always
not
work.
Not going to happen.
Yeah. Where do we go to get the money? It was like they go to Octavian. He'd go, oh, you go see Antony? Well, he's not here. Well, you just have to wait. It's his.
Just stay here.
Go see Lepidus. He's in Africa. Hey.
Well,
what do you want me to tell
you? We should know
he's at. Yeah. Go to
you
Africa.
You asked. I answer. This conversation's over.
They don't have a lot of money. So they had their son, the elder son, well, the only son they've got, Tiberius Claudius Nero at this stage, adopted by a wealthy senator who wanted
Good
to
move.
Be connected with, you know, her ancient bloodlines.
Yeah, again, a very honorable thing to do when you have a son with that kind of bloodline and you don't have a lot of money, you want what's best for him. Someone's looking to make a deal, and it's a win-win, and there's no dishonor. But everybody remembers where everybody came from, so there's still that indirect connection with your previous family that you can access when you're older and you're trying to climb up the political ladder.
But adopting him out to this guy probably wasn't a good decision, apparently, because this guy's brother was previously suspected of plotting against Octavian, was arrested and died under mysterious circumstances.
Not a good move.
Yeah.
Not a good move. Yeah. Yeah. I think we established that Octavian, had a pretty decent spy network even from early on. And so he's going to be aware of things that people probably would not want him aware of. And so, yeah, I'm sure a lot of people who spoke out against him had a talking to.
Her great grandson, the Emperor Caligula.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what Caligula means?
Lucky boots?
I think it was no. Little boots.
Little Boots, sorry. Yeah, that's back from that I, Claudius series. TV is awesome. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
He didn't like the name Caligula. He hated
no?
it. It was like they called him that when he was a kid. It was his nickname, Little Boots or something like that.
Yeah.
He called her Ulysses in a frock. Was his name for his great-grandmother.
Obviously, she's really sharp.
Yeah, yes. Really, really sharp. Like incredible, incredible lady. So in January 38 BCE, she gave birth to a second son to Nero. So she must have already been pregnant when they returned to Rome. But that didn't stop Octavian from wanting to tap that ass.
Well, first of all, let's back up for a second. If they're in Sparta and there's a little bit of a forest fire, but she still ends up pregnant around that time, this is a party girl. This is a girl I would like to meet. Please continue.
Well, she was probably, we think, about 6 months pregnant, so she was probably showing it. And, you know, Octavian just said,
I like big butts and I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny. Now when a girl walks in with an itty-bitty waist and a round thing in your face, you get sprung. Wanna pull up tough, cause you notice that butt was stuffed. Deep in the jeans she's wearing, I'm hooked and I can't stop staring. Oh, baby, I wanna get whipped up and take your picture. My homeboy's trying to warn me, but that butt you got makes
me so horny.
Ooh, rump a smooth skin. You say you want to get in my bins? Well, use me, because you ain't that average groupie. I seen her dancing. To hell with romance, and she's sweat, wet. Got it going like a turbo vet. I'm tired of magazines. Send flat butts all the thing. Take the average black man and ask him that. She got to pack much back. So, fellas,
yeah.
Fellas,
yeah.
Has your girlfriend got your butt?
Hell
tell
yeah.
Her, shake it.
Shake it.
Shake it.
Shake it.
Shake that healthy butt. Baby got bad
late days in the open booty.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Hell yeah.
Fellas.
Where were we?
Octavian notices her at a feast that he's arranging both for his 24th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Can't believe he's done all of this and he's only 23.
Jeez.
My God.
Yeah.
And it was also a celebration to shave off his beard.
Right.
Now, we've talked about the fact that he had a beard before and associated it with revenge for Caesar's death and mourning, but apparently I read that he hadn't shaved at all up until this point. He had put off a ritual that was very important to young Roman men called the Depositio Barbei.
Nice.
And this episode is brought to you by
Harry's. You'll hear more later.
Or before. Or later.
Or before.
I believe that according to Dio, he did. Octavian did, in fact, use one of Harry's razors at his Depositio Barbei. So they would normally do this, boys around 16 or 17. They would have their first shave. There'd be a big ceremony. It was a marker of readiness for a senatorial career. You were now, we know that they had the whole thing of being a man where you got the toga virilis and all of that kind of stuff on. But this was another big event.
Right.
Octavian didn't have to worry about any of that. He was like, well, you know what? I don't need to shave in order to be a consul or triumvir. I can just do whatever the fuck I want. So he didn't shave. And apparently his beard at this point had a somewhat weedy, yellowish appearance, I read.
Ooh, but not in a good way, probably. No, but the one thing that the Romans did recognize and they did honor was that, yeah, you're grieving or whatever, you don't shave, you don't cut your hair or whatever, but so they could take a look at him and take a look that obviously he should be shaving, and they would figure out pretty quickly why he was not shaving yet. So again, it was just a visceral something to put out there for the people to say, see, I am still mourning the loss of my father who was wrongly murdered, and I shall have revenge, please be on my side, kind of thing. So again, it was just part of the marketing. And he probably felt it sincerely because that's, you know, that's the way they were raised. So, But I was totally surprised when you, like you said, that I just assumed that he had been shaving and then quit shaving. I didn't know that he had not, as far as we know, ever shaven.
Yeah. Well, definitely according to the ancient sources, this was his Deposito Barbae.
Nice.
But, you know, it also made him look a little bit more impressive to Livia. Now, we don't really know when they met. I read the suggestion that maybe they had met when she returned to Rome, maybe introduced by Scribonia herself.
Oh, snap. Not good.
She was like, Octavian, I'd like you to meet. Because she must have said like that. I'd like you to meet Livia.
She's like 10 years older than him, right?
Yeah. And he was like, ba-doing! Wasn't that funny? Calm down. Now, Scribonia was pregnant too at the time.
Yeah.
And gave birth in 39 BCE to a daughter named Julia.
Julia. Yeah. But you've got the daughter, you're looking at your wife, you've been staring at each other for years, she's 10 years older than you, and you swear now she's at least 15 or 20 years older than you. The political need is not there anymore. There's certainly no love lost, and you just met this fine-looking thing who's also intelligent, not quite 20. It's time to consider greener pastures.
Half of what I say is meaningless, but I say it just to reach you, Julia. 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 Ocean child calls me.
Thank you, John. Lovely song.
Yeah.
Yeah. So remember Julia, she's gonna stick around. She's gonna have a role.
She's gonna be back.
She's gonna be back. Yeah.
She's gonna make a splash.
Oh
if,
yeah.
If I may. Yeah.
Oh yeah. She's gonna make a lot of splashes around Rome. Men are gonna be splashing everywhere for Julia, apparently. Splashing on the curtains, splashing on the walls, splashing on the ground.
Yeah, all over.
Big splash. In fact, there was a whole movie Tom Hanks, I think, was in. It's all made about Julia, just called Splash.
Which was actually a documentary about Julia, who, if she had been a mermaid. But Caesar, I mean, what I found interesting is that not only is he not being faithful to his wife anymore, he's chasing other women. I mean, the guy's 23 years old or whatever. He's having, you know, he's feeling his virility or his oats or whatever. And he's chasing other women. I guess Scribonia really has no choice. She's got to put up with it because she's only a woman. Mark Antony, on the other hand, who could choose to be offended by Caesar blatantly chasing other women, I think at this point does not really choose to make it an issue. So Caesar's going around, but even through all this, he meets her. They fall for each other. I'm sure it was a physical and an intellectual or emotional, mental connection, because it does seem to be real and it does seem to be almost, if not instantaneous.
Yeah, it does seem to have been the real deal, which was unusual for Rome at this time. But yeah, up until this point, he was supposedly banging women all over Rome. And in later years, his friends justified it by saying he only banged senators' wives so he could find out what their husbands were thinking, which I think is the greatest excuse of all time.
That's like you going to other market. You go into a marketer's party and people bring their wives. You drag the wife back to the closet. You bang her real quick up against the wall. By the way, what's your husband's plans this year in business? I mean, come on. They were trying to make it sound like he was being politically shrewd. He was just a horny little bugger. That's all. we all were when we were 24, but they had to put a positive spin on it because they're his friends.
Antony later claimed that Octavian was once seen hustling the wife of an ex-consul from the dining room into a bedroom in front of his very eyes.
Scoot, scoot, scoot.
And returning her to the dinner with disheveled hair and blushing to the ears.
Ooh. And that over there, ma'am, is the picture I wanted to show you earlier. Please have a seat next to your husband. And I'm spent.
Wipe your mouth. I mean, it's good to be the king, right?
It is. It really, really is. Oh, my God.
Now, Octavian, being all class, divorces Scribonia on the day she gives birth to Julia. Oh,
that's so romantic.
And I love this. The only thing a Roman husband needed to do to divorce his wife was to say, tuas res tibi habeto. Take your things for yourself. That was it.
Pause. I'm going to go say that to my wife and see what happens real quick. I'll be right back.
No, it was the equivalent of get the fuck out of here.
Grab your shit. Get the fuck out of my house. I don't want to see your face again.
Yeah, that was it. That was it. That's all he had to do to get a divorce. In this case, though, Octavian also said he could no longer stand her bitter personality.
That's not helping. But let me ask this question. If you can divorce your wife with a sentence, then how serious is the institution of marriage? I mean, we all know it's political connections and it serves a purpose and you marry your daughters off to whoever. But I guess if you can just utter that phrase and it's gone, it really couldn't be what we consider marriage to be nowadays.
Well, I think it was very serious for the woman.
Right.
Serious
business. Uh-huh, go ahead.
Even though we know that, women fucked around a lot. We know that, Caesar's flame, what was her name?
Servilia.
Servilia. She was married and he was fucking her for decades. But she didn't bear him any children. So this was the thing. And again, if you go back to Marx and Engels and the Communist Manifesto, one of the things that the communists, Marx and Engels believed was that a true communist society wouldn't have marriage. Because the history of marriage, they believed, was about men owning women for the purposes of breeding. If you go back to ancient tribal societies where everyone fucked everyone and no one really understood the process of conception anyway, no one knew whose children were whose. And people didn't care probably in ancient
societies. Because it was a communal, taking care of the children, I guess. Excellent. Yeah,
everyone raised everyone's kids and no one knew the difference. But at some point, particularly one of the books I read once, can't remember where it was, but when these ancient tribal societies moved to a stage where they started building wealth and assets, men would go out, conquer neighboring tribes, bring back some of their shit and go, this is mine.
My shit.
And then when they were going to die, they wanted to pass it on to their kids. When they started to develop hierarchies in their societies.
Because it means something to them, yeah.
They wanted to pass on, assets and power and wealth. So they needed to know, whose kid is mine? So the women then became private property. No, she could only bear children and probably only fuck around with, because they didn't know how to stop them bearing children, probably at old enough societies, to that guy. So they became private property. And, the communists didn't think that was a good idea, although I don't think that's ever been enacted in any socialist or communist society, but that was...
Not too late, but no, I don't think it's been enacted.
So, the women weren't allowed to be impregnated by anyone else. Would have been a huge scandal. We know that Julius Caesar divorced one of his wives and said that, Caesar's wife needs to be beyond suspicion.
Right.
Caesar, of course, could fuck whoever he wanted, whenever.
Double standard, baby. Yeah. Double standard.
Well, So, anywho.
Yep.
Octavian divorces Scribonia. Claudius Nero also divorces Livia in October 39 BCE. What a nice guy.
Yeah.
But again, he probably wasn't in love with her. He probably, she was just things. She'd given him two sons, one, and it was about to give him another one.
Right.
And, A, you don't say no to Octavian, and B, I'm sure Octavian made it worth his while.
Exactly. Exactly. Look, especially if he truly did love her. Yep.
Yeah, I'm in love. I'm crazy mad about this chick. What? Are you in love with her? Yeah, she's all right, yeah. But you know.
Here's some money.
Okay, listen. Yeah, yeah. Here's some money. Yeah. Done. Deal's done.
Yeah, done.
Not only that.
Spit and shake.
When they get married, Octavian and Livia, her ex-husband gives her away at the wedding because her father's dead. Sweet.
That's sweet. That is so sweet. So yeah,
it's
so
just like Virginia, really, isn't it? It's like
ding
ding ding ding ding ding ding.
Pretty much. So she gives birth. So she gives birth to his second child 3 days later, and she's already moved in with him. They get married, and he comes back to give his ex-wife away. That's fucking West Virginia right there, all over. But anyway, I digress.
So yeah, the way it plays out is, Octavian goes to the College of the Pontiffs to get a ruling, which he belonged to, so that was convenient, to get a legal ruling or a spiritual ruling on the whole deal, and particularly about the kid, because they didn't want there to be any suggestion that the kid didn't belong to Nero.
That he didn't tap that ass months ago before they were married. That is not his child. He wants it absolutely clear.
And the College of Pontiffs say, yeah, this is fine. You can get it all done. And so
I just want to read a quick bit from Dio about that. I just think it's funny. So he inquired of the pontiffs whether it was permissible to wed her while pregnant. They answered that if the origin of the fetus were doubtful, the marriage should be put off. But if it were definitely admitted, nothing prevented an immediate consummation. Perhaps they really found this among the ordinances of the forefathers, but certainly they would have said so. They would have said even so had they not found it. So at least Dio was being honest about it. Yeah, but that's one of the reasons why Caesar wanted to be absolutely clear to everybody, this is not my child, so we can go ahead and hurry and get married. And we had the blessings of the pontiffs, and so he just wanted all nice and clean, because that is the way I think that we've proven over and over again that the way Octavian's mind works. Nice, cut, clean, established, backed up by the Senate. Everything is official. It looks good on paper.
Yeah, it looks good on paper.
Yeah.
The quote I mentioned earlier about love is from Seneca, who lived a little bit after these guys, the Roman philosopher Seneca, that is. He said, one could even say that love is a friendship gone mad.
Oh, I like that.
So that's maybe a bit about how the Roman elite thought about love. They understood love, but they thought it's friendship gone mad. Yeah. Why would you do
that? In proportion. Love in proportion is okay.
It's ridiculous.
Right.
So they married for different reasons, but in this case, there seems to have been something special, as we said. So they divorce their respective spouses. Then Octavian and Livia move in together.
Awkward.
Yeah. Can you imagine living with a woman who is 6 months pregnant to another guy? Yeah. But you know, that's what you do when you're in love, man. It doesn't matter.
I felt the bastard kick me.
Imagine
what do you say?
How many times you're walking down the street and people are like, oh, congratulations. And he's like, no, it's not mine.
Not to me.
Thanks.
Not to me. It's a, talk to her. Talk to her.
So the kid is born on the 14th of January, 38 BCE. Drusus Claudius Nero is his name. He's immediately sent to his father to be raised.
Off you go. Yes.
Along with the first son, Tiberius Claudius Nero. And I'd like to ask the women out there, can you imagine giving up both of your children to be raised by fathers? That said, probably wasn't unusual for women to have their children raised by somebody else in the elite Roman circles in those days, as it was not uncommon up until very recently with the elite circles in England and the United States and in Australia. They'd send their kids off to boarding school. At the age of, six, where they would see them on holidays only, and, or they'd be raised by nannies or that.
Yeah.
Whatever. This is the way things are done.
That's amazing.
But Octavian and Livia get married on the 17th of January, 3 days after she gives birth. But.
Yes.
Her ex-husband dies.
No. Oh, he didn't do anything. He says be stupid.
He dies not long after that, and in his will,
Right.
Both sons are to be given to Octavian to be raised.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the first one was adopted out, but then...
I think that adoption didn't... Yeah, they didn't
take.
Didn't take, yeah.
Didn't take. Yeah, so he's gonna boom, suddenly I marry this hot chick, I'm ready for at least 10 years of a honeymoon sex, and now I've got these two kids that aren't mine.
That's the life of a step-parent.
Yes, but it's no longer good to be the king. He just ruined the line, it's good to be king. Oh, well.
Yeah, well, you know, they could still bang. They just had to, give the kids $5 and tell them to go get an ice cream.
You two go over there, further, over there. All right.
Now, after they get married, they have this massive banquet with an Olympian theme, which is called the Feast of the Divine Twelve.
Oh, my God.
Did you read about that?
Well, I read that he came as Apollo, and they had a bunch of friends over, and they had the best of everything. And I read something about, you know, the little boys running around saying mean things. I don't want to ruin anything for you. But, yeah, so they have this huge, massive feast. They're celebrating. It's all extravagant. And literally right outside their door, the people of Rome were starving because Octavian is waging a shitty-ass war against Sextus, who has cut off all grain to the mainland. So it's definitely better to be one of the haves than the have-nots, especially at this point in Rome.
Hold on, I thought they had a deal with Sextus and everyone was happy now.
Oh, shit, I'm getting confused. I'm sorry. Oh, the war hasn't come yet. I apologize.
No, you're right. There was new friction with Sextus. New things. We'll get into that.
Ave listeners, and welcome to the story of me, the Life of Augustus podcast. Did you know that when I was 24 years old, I shaved my beard for the first time? True story. And did you know that I used a razor from Harry's.com? Equally true. Why did I get a razor from Harry's? Simple. Unum, their German-engineered 5-blade cartridges are of the highest quality. Duo, free shipping throughout the US of A. Trace, since Harry's cuts out the middleman, their factory direct prices will save you half off the leading brands. Quator, money back guarantee if you're not satisfied. Queen K, their amazing starter kits, and make sure you check out the Truman one, which comes with a razor handle, 3 of Harry's 5-blade German-engineered razors, and moisturizing shave cream, are only $15. But if you use the promo code LOC at checkout for your first purchase, you get $5 off that. That's a Magnus deal. Make sure you check out their new Truman razor with its rubberized non-slip grip for extra control. It's perfect for shaving in the shower or in the large bath at the palace. Oh, you don't have one of those. Sucks to be a pleb. Anyway, pull your chariot over right now. Go to harrys.com. That's harrys.com. Look around. You can normally be done in about 30 seconds. Get yourself a starter kit. And don't forget the promo code LOC at checkout to save $5 off. See you around the forum.
Anyway, gotcha. So they have this Feast of the Divine Twelve. As you say, Octavian goes dressed as Apollo. Another reason he needed to be clean-shaven, because Apollo was always clean-shaven. They had 6 men and 6 women dressed as Greek gods. Oh, it's God. Likely that Livia went as a goddess as well. But imagine how Antony's going to take this when he hears about it, that Octavian is holding a party saying he is the god Apollo. We know that Antony's just been declared Dionysus over in Athens. Now
everybody's a god.
Yeah,
everybody's
you're a god. You're a god. You're a god. Antony, I love the hypocrisy of this, wrote a letter criticizing Octavian and the other gods as being impious. He's just been declared the new Dionysus and got married to Athena over in Athens. But he writes a letter back to Octavian criticizing him as being impious. No, you shouldn't associate yourself with the gods.
That's tacky. You're gonna piss off the gods. You're gonna piss off the gods. Me? I've always suspected my semi-divinity. It's okay.
Hey, forget about it. Hey.
Don't worry about it. Forget about it. Going over here.
Yeah, you look over there. You worry about your own business, eh? So as you also mentioned in your brief sort of summary of things, there was a fashion at the time for aristocratic ladies to be attended by scantily dressed or even naked young boys who were called the delicae. Now they were like snarky bitches, basically. They were like YouTube snarks,
right?
They would hover around at banquets and shit, and would whisper crude, acidic, sarcastic comments into the ears of their masters,
right?
And apparently, both Livia and Octavian had delicae. And one boy is supposed to have pointed at Claudius Nero, reclining on the other side of the table, and whispered into Livia's ear, "Why are you over here, lady, when your husband is over there?" Ooh.
Oh, snap. I wonder if someone fed them the lines, or were they like professional naked party boys, which, you know, where do I sign up? But so because they were the upper crust, they enjoyed a little bit of crudeness. They thought it was extra, you know, a little extra fun, a little dangerous or exciting or whatever, because their lives are so boring anyways. But yeah.
And these delicae could just say all sorts of, they were paid to say mean, nasty, sarcastic shit. And it was funny.
We would be rich. We would be rich.
Yeah, they were the Ryan Cam of their time, the delicae.
Just naked and younger. But anyway, yeah.
So, but as you mentioned, food was still short in Rome at the time because there were new raids happening along the coastline. Grain shipments were still getting intercepted by pirates. Now, whether this was in or out of Sextus's control was a matter of debate.
Yeah. Well, if you've got 200 ships, thousands of men, you're not going to know what everybody's going to be doing at all times. You and I could slip, raid, come back, and if anybody asks us, we'll just say we were told to do it, but obviously keep all the loot for ourselves. We have no idea of knowing if it was organized or not.
Yeah. And Sextus denied it. Octavian accused him of it. Sextus is like, "Well, you're building a fleet of ships." And Octavian's like, well, I can, because it's my country. Don't you worry about you. You're not the boss.
Don't you look
of me.
Over here. Yeah. You look over here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And then he was all like,
"Hey, relax, guy."
And then Sextus was,
"It's a trap."
And, you know, it was just going backwards and forwards. But the people, because the people were still starving, and they saw this lavish feast where Octavian was dressed as Apollo, they said he was Apollo, but Apollo the Tormentor. One of the less pleasant aspects of the god. We know these Greek gods and Roman gods had lots of different aspects of, you know, their powers and what they got involved in. After the feast, people complained that the gods have eaten all the grain.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And these people in Rome could pretty much put on a Parisian fashion show. They're probably also skinny and starving. And here he is partying it up. You know, you have to have guards around your house because people, I mean, they're already attacking your tax collectors. They're looking for some food and they want, I mean, at this point, you just got to matter. They don't care who wins. They just want the food to start coming in. Forget anybody's dignitas or anything like that. They just want it to be over. There's nothing they can do to control it, but they're the ones who are suffering because of someone else's ineptitude.
So these pirate raids are going on. Grain is short. Octavian claims that they captured some of the pirates who revealed under torture.
Yeah, because that always works.
That Sextus had sent them. Yeah, it does according to George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. Man.
That's right. And if that doesn't work, you shoot him in the face.
It's an accident. Was it true? Who knows? You know, what would Sextus's motivation have been? Well, you know, maybe he understood that the deal wasn't really the deal and Octavian was building a fleet, so he was going to try and force pressure on him. Maybe Octavian just made it all up in order to justify, you know, a future war against Sextus. We don't know.
But I just have to ask this question. I mean, let's say that Sextus did not send in the raids. What, I mean, he's in his 20s or maybe early 30s, I'm not sure exactly, but what is he going to do for the rest of his life? Is he just going to, I've got my fleet, we're constantly almost at the state of war, I've got my Corsica, Sardinia, Sicily, and I'm just going to hold these for the rest of my life in between the mainland and North Africa? I mean, is that it? Is that what he's going to do for the rest of his life? Is that the end all be all of his existence? I mean, you've got to think he's got to want it over one way or another, just like everybody else does. And he can never trust Caesar, and he can never trust Lepidus, who's to the south of him. Something's got to give. You can't just stay like this forever and ever. So if he did not launch the raids, even if Caesar does come at him, you got to think, well, okay, good. Let's end this. So maybe I can take over Italy and revenge what y'all did to my father, you know, lo these many years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I would just get bored. If I had control of three islands in the Mediterranean and the Peloponnese Peninsula in Greece, I'd be like, I could live with that.
Yeah. You know, kick back.
Corsica. Yeah. You know, I love Corsica, man. I just give me Corsica. Give me command control of Corsica. I'm good for the rest of my life.
You're done.
Man.
Yep.
Yeah.
Done. Who knows?
Speaking of which, 2018, people, put it in the books. The summer of 2018, well, the US summer, July 2018, I'm going to be in Corsica.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
It'll be the 10-year anniversary when Chrissy and I met in Corsica.
Aww. So
we're gonna have a tour. We're gonna do a Caesar Alexander tour, Napoleon tour of them parts of the world. Put it in your diaries. Start right. saving your pennies now. Also, want to give a shout out to one of our listeners whose name I can't recall.
Better not be Rob.
Wasn't Rob, but I'm gonna look it up so I don't fuck it up.
Right.
Arsen Nissanyan.
Mm-hmm.
Probably fucked up the pronunciation of that. Sorry, Arsen.
I doubt it.
Arsen Nissanyan. Listener of ours who is studying classics at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland.
Cool.
But he's from Turkey and his family owns a hotel in Ephesus. And he said, wow. Hey, if you ever want to stay at the hotel, let me know. I'll hook you up. Isn't that nice?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Arsen. That's absolutely. What we want. We want like favors. Do us favors. People look Do after us.
Yeah. Yeah. Which clearly someone needs to look after us. But I would like to add on to Cam's 2018. Cam hasn't invited me along yet, but I'm going to bring my family to help celebrate his, I guess, meeting Chrissy or marriage or whatever. I'm going to bring all the kids. And that's when you're going to actually see Fox and either Kiki or Sophie officially betrothed, promised to each other to unite the two families.
The two empires.
The two empires, that's right. we're going to make it official.
So there's friction going on. Appian also claims that Sexy had broken a deal with Antony regarding sending a tribute from the Peloponnese. Mm. And this was used by Octavian as an excuse for war. Also, one of Sexy P's most trusted admirals, the freed slave Menas/Menodorus, who we talked about a few episodes ago, had defected to Octavian.
Right.
Dio writes, Minas, who at this time was still in Sardinia as if he were a kind of praetor, had incurred the suspicion of Sextus by his release of Helenus and because he had been in communication with Caesar. And he was also slandered to some extent by the people of his own rank who envied him his power because he was just a freed slave and now he's like a governor of Sardinia and Corsica.
Right.
He was therefore summoned by Sextus on the pretext that he should give an account of the grain and money of which he had been in charge. But instead of obeying, he seized and killed the men sent to him on this errand. Right. And after first negotiating with Octavian, surrendered to him the islands, the fleet together with the army and himself.
Mm. So a major turnaround in this ongoing war with Sextus. So suddenly he controls two of the three islands, not the big one, not Sicily, where a lot of the grain comes, but now he's got a lot more ships. He's got two of the three islands, and now maybe he could begin to end this thing and put it behind him because Caesar, as I think we've kind of passively pointed out, seems to want the whole ball of wax. He will not be content until he's the lone standing man of the Roman world.
Yeah. And, you know, he wants, I imagine, the money and the fleet and the army that comes with all of that.
Absolutely.
Because he knows that, you know, shit is still not good between him and Antony.
Right. They're barely
tolerating each other.
Yeah.
And it's, he can see the writing on the wall. By the way, but Dio continues with this thing with Menace. He says that Octavian gave him gold rings to wear, which was apparently a big deal. I didn't realize this. Dio writes, "Now the matter of the gold rings is as follows. Of the ancient Romans, no one, not merely of those who had once been slaves, but even of those who had been brought up free, was allowed to wear gold rings except senators and knights, as has been stated. And for this reason, they are given to such freedmen as the ruler may choose, even though these men are already wearing gold in other ways, as a mark of honor, indicating that they are superior to the status of freedmen and are eligible to become knights."
Nice.
So Menace, Menedorus, coming up in the world even further. He's already an admiral and governor.
Right.
And now he is eligible to become a knight of Rome and is able to wear gold rings. So that's your dinner party story for this episode. When you see somebody wearing a gold, you go, "Is that gold ring?" And they go, "Yeah." They go, "Well, you know, what the fuck? Are you a senator or a knight? Right. Like, where do you get off wearing that?"
Throw a drink in their face. "You fucking betrayer.
Your father was a builder. Oh, you traitor. Fraud.
Commoner. Yeah.
And Octavian starts to plan an invasion of Sicily for 38 BCE.
Get it on.
While he's banging his recently pregnant wife.
Oh, God. I hope they waited a while, but that's as far as I'm going to go into that subject.
I just want to know if she had a C-section or not. Because, you know, if you want to keep it all tight down there.
Yeah.
You go to the C-section.
I don't know. Really? But like you said, there's other things to do.
Greek style.
I guess, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, so, you can go Greek for the rest of your life. But, you know, there's a lot of effort that comes with that. Just
who knows? We weren't there. Again, we need a time machine to answer these.
Well, this is why it is called a caesarean section, because Octavian said to Livia, "Listen, I'm going to marry you on one condition. You know, we take it out through the side, because, you know, I don't want that snatch getting ruined, man. Like, you know,
you're not even 20. Why do that to me? To yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just thinking of you. It's all about your pleasure.
That's all I ever do.
Nothing to do with me. Perish the thought.
I'm just happy to be standing next to you.
I'm happy to go up the back door. I'm happy to go Greek. But I'm thinking of you, really. Right. I know, you know, you don't love it. You do it, and I appreciate that. You're not a big on ass to mouth. Okay, I get that. But it's... And look, ass to mouth is fine in certain circumstances. Sorry. If it's someone you love. It's fine.
Sorry.
But it's... I'm thinking of you.
That's right.
He said.
Okay.
And then he turned around and buried his laugh. Oh, I think that's an episode.
Yeah, I think that is.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, listeners. Oh, we should do some reviews.
Oh, yes, if we have any, yeah.
I have one.
Woo!
Most entertaining history podcast ever by Palm Beach 25. Totally love these guys. They inexplicably balance irreverent adolescent humor with in-depth historical information. For all those who are offended by Cameron's lefty political views, I'm as right-winged as they come. But I find there is always something to be learned by listening to an opposing viewpoint. Anyway, thanks, guys, mostly Cameron, for all the tireless research you put into each show. You are greatly appreciated. Well, Palm Beach 25, you and Rob Irwin really ganging up on Ray lately. I think, you know,
people are
trying to send you a message, Ray.
I couldn't give a... Anyway, should we tell people why they should... Oh, never mind. That's something else. Scratch that. I apologize.
I don't even know where you're going. Why they should what?
I'll tell you after we finish. It's all hush hush shh. Oh, secret top secret.
Shh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shh. Okay. Thank you, Palm Beach 25. Send us an email. Ave@lifeofcaesar.com.
With you're not getting shit from me.
And you're not getting shit from Ray, but I'll send you something. Don't worry about it.
I'm just joking.
Leave us a review, folks. The reviews have been slowing down of late. You know, lift your game, people. Come on, lift your game.
You can do it.
Particularly if you're listening to this for free. If you're a patron already of the show, lifeforcaesar.com/patron. For those who aren't, if you're a patron, okay, fair enough. You're coughing up. You're doing your bit to support us. We appreciate that. If you're not a patron of the show and you're still listening for free, at least go up and leave us a good review on iTunes. You know, just go. If it's not that hard, go to our website, lifeforcaesar.com. In the right-hand panel, you'll see a link to leave an iTunes review. Click on that. It's going to take you 60 seconds. Write something extremely clever and funny.
Right.
And that's all you got to do.
Yeah, boom, done.
All right, thanks. Bye. We'll be right back.